Hi, everybody. Welcome. This is Judy Neal, and this is August 29th, 2013, our monthly Edgewalker teleconference. And the topic tonight is focusing. Focusing is one of the five Edgewalker skills, and something that's really essential if you're going to make a positive difference in the world, to be able to not be scattered and confused and having your energy go different directions, but to be able to focus in on the things that are most important to you. And so tonight we'll be talking about the inner and outer skills of focusing, and I'll just be doing some conversation starting, and then we'll all jump in and share questions, share what works for us, special techniques if you have anything, and so we'll learn from each other. If you want to mute, you can mute by doing star 6, and star 6 will also unmute you. So I want to begin with a quote and then a moment of silence, and this quote comes from a futurist named John Shar. No relation to our futurist friend John Rhenish, I don't believe, but I found something he wrote that I thought would be a good way to start and to have some moments of quiet to contemplate what he has to say. He writes, "The future is not a result of choices among alternative paths offered by the present, but a place that is created first in mind and will, created next in activity. The future is not some place we are going to, but one we are creating. Paths are not to be found, but made. And the activity of making them changes both the maker and the destination." Please join me in a moment of silence as we connect energetically with each other and with our higher selves, our higher power, however you might define that. Thank you. I want to begin by giving you the definition of focusing from the Edgewalker book, and that doesn't mean it is the end-all and be-all, but this is my definition as results from the interviews I had done with people who have a real gift for walking between worlds. So the Edgewalker skill of focusing is defined as the ability to be very centered and to give all your attention to an action, a person, or a project that has significance and importance. And as I've been thinking about this topic this month, because this is sort of the theme of the month of August for us, I realized that when I think about focusing, there's two kind of different categories of ways to develop the skill of focusing. So one of them I call inner work, and the other is outer work. And so the inner work is really all about honing our skill of being centered, of focusing singularly on something such as in meditation. And I'll give you some examples, and then I'd love to hear more examples. And then after that, we can talk about the outer work, which really is more like time management, a very practical, grounded rules for being focused in your activities in the outer world. So when we get to that, I'll share some thoughts and then open it up for you as for your thoughts as well. Before I do that, any questions, comments, needs, concerns? Okay. Hearing none, we'll just go ahead and move on. So here are some of the inner work approaches that I have found and have read about that help develop focus. And one of the most simple is simply the breath meditation, to focus on the breath. I say simply, it's not the easiest thing to do. And yet it is one that almost anybody who teaches a form of meditation will incorporate, focusing on the breath. When I lived in Connecticut, I belonged to a meditation group in Middletown, and the teacher there took a slightly different approach to breath meditation, because many people talk about noticing the breath going in and out. And he said to notice the sound of the breath. Even if you can't hear the breath, be paying attention to the breath as if you could hear the sound of it. And I found, for me personally, that that took me deeper than just sort of the kinesthetic feeling of the breath. But we're all different, so that's just one approach I wanted to offer. And then many people are familiar with the mantra meditation of having a sacred word or phrase that sometimes is given by a teacher or sometimes just comes to you that helps you to keep centered. Many people recommend using the word one if you don't have any other word to use on a mantra meditation. That's one that the word one is very powerful for centering and being focused. So the idea is to practice focusing on just one thing. And it's like building spiritual muscle, that practice of sitting and focusing only on one word or focusing only on your breath. I have another friend who teaches focusing on the tip of your baby finger. Some people are kinesthetic, so that kind of focus works better for them. But that constantly bringing yourself back to that focusing, when you do that in meditation, builds skills for the rest of the day when you're not meditating, or you carry that skill of meditating into your daily life. Another inner work form of focus is in the Christian tradition is centering prayer, which is a form of prayer and meditation revived by Father Thomas Keating in the Catholic Church. And he says it's different from traditional meditation, even though it looks just like a meditation with a mantra, because you do choose a sacred word to focus on. But he says that word is used as a prayer to invite God into your heart. So that is different from the way a mantra meditation is usually described. And he's written a small little book that's quite beautiful on centering prayer that I highly recommend. So those are three forms of sitting and being contemplative. But for some people, that approach of sitting quietly just does not work. And they may need to do something that is more physical. So silent walking is another thing that people can use to get more focus, to notice your feet on the ground, to notice your breath as you're walking, and to try to stay fully present just with the walking and to not let your mind wander. This teacher that I mentioned in Middletown, they call him Meditation Bob, and the last time I was there, a couple of months ago, and whenever I'm in Connecticut, I love to go to the meditation group. It just renews me. And he said something really interesting that I hadn't ever heard before. And he said, you know, and I've heard people say, your mind will wander. You will not be able to focus. That is part of the natural experience with this kind of inner work. But what he said that was unique about that was, when you notice your mind wandering and you bring it back to your breath, your sacred word, your feet on the ground, whatever that is, he calls that the turnaround. And he says that's the whole purpose of the meditation, that practice of turning around, of coming back to center. And that just really resonated for me when I thought about daily life and how my mind can be wandering when I'm working on a project or in a conversation or on the telephone. And to consciously choose to come back to the present moment, that's the actual muscle that I think is so important to strengthen and that these practices help with. Another one is silent eating. and just really being present with the food, eating slowly, mindfully. And then a different sort of one is creating sacred space. So really intentionally where you work or where you want to be focused, to clear out the clutter, to get rid of the piles, to get rid of the things that are not what it is you're working on. That physical clearing can also be a conscious choice to become more focused, you know, to practice being focused. So those are just some thoughts that I have about inner work that helps you focus. And I'd like to open it up now to ask what other things you do or what you'd like to build on with what I've said. Anyone can go ahead and speak. And if you've muted, just hit star 6.
Hey, Judy.
Yes,
it's Brenda.
Yes.
Hi. Hi, everyone. I seem to be in a life that's deeply embroiled in getting to do this on a daily basis, and I'm quite blessed to do so. Something for me that I hear from my teachers that helps is remembering that there are 4 parts to the breath. There is the inhale and then the stillness, and inhaling down into your stomach. Be careful about inhaling only into your chest, inhaling down deep, and then the stillness, and then the exhale, trying to feel it come up your spine. And if you can really feel it subtly, your coccyx on the exhale will move forward, and this actually pushes the spinal fluid up your column, and you can feel the breath come up your spine and out, and then there's the stillness after the exhale before the next inhale. So when I'm thinking about, other than a mantra, the 4 parts, it gives me yet one other thing to focus on. So I just wanted to share that with everyone.
Oh, thank you so much. And that creates greater and finer distinctions, and actually seems to me like that would make it easier to stay focused because there is more to focus on. I don't know if that's your experience.
Yes, and it's to hold that space of the stillness too for a few seconds, or, you know, as long as it's realistically comfortable.
Brenda, why don't you share, you know, you started off by saying you get daily opportunities to practice this. Why don't you share who you are and what you do? I think people would love to hear your Edgewalker way of being in the world.
Oh, my goodness. So I live in an ashram in Oregon, and we have 2 locations here, obviously, in Oregon in the United States, and one in Kathmandu, Nepal. The abbot of the ashram, the Swami, holds lineages in both Hindu, it's Kashmir Shaivism, through the Nityananda lineage, and he also holds lineages in Vajrayana or Tibetan Buddhist practices. So it's very odd for someone to hold 2 lineages. So I get the daily indoctrination of both. So every morning meditations and every evening meditations and direct Shakti and working directly for him. I get to meet with him on a daily basis and get that direct Shakti too. It's quite exhausting to the system. It's like having internal surgery every day, and my system is just, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's, it's an amazing study and philosophy and practice, and not a religion, but a philosophy. So I live in this big college dorm, if you will. So it's a communal living, and yes, I've spent 20 years in corporate life, and spent another 8 in, academia, and now I have a hybrid of all of it, and doing work for the ashram as well as continuing my academic ties and teaching.
And part of your role there is a business role to integrate the spirituality in the work.
Yes, it's very interesting.
I think you need to write a book.
Yeah, it's the other side of really, you know, the intentional interjection of spirituality into management. Well, this is the intentional interjection of management into spirituality, and it creates, and I get to be an observer of some very interesting dynamics. It's fascinating, really.
I'm so glad you're on the call. Thank you, Brenda.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation.
Okay. Would someone else like to share something you do for inner work that might be helpful to others, or at least is helpful to you?
Oh, hi, Judy. This is Amit. How you doing?
Hi, Amit. Nice to hear you.
Yeah, likewise. You know, I find it the subject so intriguing, and I think Brenda mentioned something about Shakti and being also, staying in the ashram and participating, I think, with the guru has been the lineage of Nityananda and also some, you know, and has got the lineage in Nepal. But most importantly, what I sort of came to realize of lately that, when you talk about focusing as a discussion point, and try to incorporate that into your work, into your ethics, into your daily life, and sort of try and make a meaning out of that. You know, the question you ask is, you know, you're trying to center yourself, you're looking for oneness, but primarily, what really reveals after a point of time when you start a meditation practice is a draw that, that in essence, as you start enjoying this and you start bringing this into your workplace, into your environment, into your life, into your day-to-day activities, that everything entirely becomes a meditation. And, Brenda also mentioned the word about Shakti, and I'm sure she knows Sally Kempton. I happened to meet Sally some time ago.
She's been here, and we know her well.
Yes. So I had some very interesting conversations with her, and I met her off lately, and it was just a revelation in the sense that I was reading a book, The Love of Meditation, and some of the things which she draws in that book in terms of initial experiences and practical advices for meditation. I saw that to be very honest and very useful in terms of a writer writing that in a book so simplistically and so articulatingly. And then I decided just to take a workshop with her, and I said, wow, this is great. You know, she's so open, she's so practical in terms of, giving a perspective around how you can understand yourself in the context of your being and the importance of the word Shakti, at the spiritual level, but when you look at this and start, bringing that to your normal self, in terms of also looking at from a standpoint of focusing, what it really draws back is that, meditation, is in itself is an art of living, and the more you integrate that into your life, into your day-to-day activities, it reveals that everything becomes a meditation, even the noise. I'm actually right now sitting in a pizzeria, you won't believe it, in a kitchen. I came on a bike ride, and I wanted to basically pick this call up. But now, having gone through this process, having understood what meditation is all about, things don't really bother me as much as they used to. And the second aspect of that is also to sort of pick up certain things and look at not from a standpoint of discipline, but also look at from a standpoint of habits and try and inculcate habits that really can support your objective, whatever that may be, either in meditation or in work or other in, play or whatever. So that's something which I find, to be a sort of a slightly different approach, which has sort of worked for me in the past and has really given me a new sort of sense of understanding and has brought, I would say, a lot of joy to me in terms of how I look at things now.
Thank you so much. I like what you're saying about a habit, because there's so much research on the brain and habits. And basically, if you can do something 21 days in a row, you have reordered the channels in your brain so that it becomes a regular discipline. You've created a new habit, and it's much easier to stick to. But you have to will yourself to do it for the first 21 days.
Yes, and you know, I mean, if you recall this or not, but I think we, I met you sometime in 1999, and I think I haven't seen you since then. But that was the first time I met you. One of the most important things, I think, in our conversation, something just came up was, you know, what is the most powerful force in the world? And I think you did mention at that time it's love. And over the years, you know, I've sort of pondered upon that, but now I've kind of realized that it is love. It is the most powerful integrating gel. And however you realize that, you know, it can really give a different kind of an uptake in terms of how you perceive things, how you define yourself, how you define relationships, and most importantly, you know, how you meditate.
Yeah, well, thank you for a reminder. I remember, for those of you on the call, I used to work at the University of New Haven, and Amit just walked into my office and said, I want to talk to you. You're doing stuff on spirituality in the workplace, and I want to talk to you. And we sat down and probably had a two-hour conversation, and then many after that, as well as many phone calls. And I've always found our conversations so inspiring, so challenging and thought-provoking, but also really full of love. And I just so appreciate your consistent friendship and connection and the consistent deepening of your own work that you do in a pretty challenging world. Amit works in the world of IT and software, and it can be very challenging, but probably all the more reason why what you do is valuable.
No, I appreciate that, Julie. Thanks.
Thank you. Would one more person like to share something you do as inner work for focusing, or any thoughts you have about the conversation so far that you'd like to add to?
Sure. Ken here, Judy.
Hi, Ken.
Hi. Well, this is wonderful, by the way. Thank you, everybody. I'd like to add along the lines of what Ahmed reminds me of about the power of love. For myself, being a now 42 years meditator, and also I'm blessed and fortunate to be a teacher of that, a dynamic version, I find that what you said earlier about the mind wandering, it kind of goes with the territory because we're accessing an altered state. And also what I find for myself personally that I've shared with others is that often when the mind is wandering or we feel restless or uncomfortable, it's because it's almost like our ego is having a tantrum. We're being maybe a little self-absorbed and you know what I mean? We're worried about something. And what I find very powerful for me is I don't use specifically the centering prayer by Father Keaton, but I'll bring into my awareness, into my thoughts, people I care about, whether it be my wife, my children, or close friends, business associates, whoever it may be, and do some, like a prayer for them, sending them healing thoughts, and doing some creative visualization. And I have found that it really helps me to transcend the feelings of self-absorption it transforms the energy into a much higher expression. And when I do that, although it's not why I'm doing it, it's just I discovered that by doing that, it brings me right back to focus. It brings me right back into that centered feeling. The meditation is richer. You know, you feel like your whole body's vibrating. And I do this every morning as part of my habit and my ritual for minimum 30 minutes to an hour as a way to start it. And I found with others, I would recommend it highly that if you find, you know, anyone on the call, if you find your mind wandering, by just thinking of someone else you care about and doing a little positive visualization for them or say a prayer, whatever is your thing, something about that just transforms that energy. And the next thing you know, you're really there focused, centered, and then more likely to consciously access our authentic self.
And that so fits with what you said, Ken, about the mind when it wanders. It's like the ego having a tantrum. So to shift your energy and focus to others just gets away from whatever the ego is doing and gets in love, transcends ego so much. I mean, it holds ego. It's not that it's separate from ego, because love is in us and ego is in us. But by shifting your consciousness to the love you have for others and wishing them well and visualizing and healing energy, boy, that's a beautiful way to get out of ego and to focus on something at a higher level. I could see why that would make you vibrate.
And by the way, if I may add, also during the night, you know, it's become common, I notice, that people getting to sleep okay but waking up, and often what wakes us up is because we're at the end of a sleep cycle, you know, that part of a sleep cycle, but it's thoughts about work or concerns, and we have that anxiety building up. And again, it's like the ego having that tantrum, and by doing the same thing, gets you right back to sleep. And it shifts it, much like the research going on about just feeling appreciation. You know, not to sound preachy, but I can remember as a kid growing up in Brooklyn, New York, being told, you know, count your blessings. And it's so true, because too often we go to sleep at night complaining about what we don't have rather than just simply acknowledging what we do have and, you know, and our blessings. And the interesting thing is the more we allow ourselves to feel and appreciate that genuinely and heartfelt, the more we do have.
It really is. It shifts the vibration of what we attract, I believe.
Absolutely. That's been my experience.
Yeah. Well, those are two beautiful applications of shifting the energy from ego to a higher level of consciousness. Thank you for that. I'm going to try them. That's just very, very helpful.
No, you're not going to try. You're going to do it. You're a do it. You're not a try.
You're right.
You're a do it.
Thank you for that chiropractic verbal adjustment.
No, I feel like Yoda. Remember Yoda used to say that? No try, do.
No try, only do. Yeah, I love that. My dog's name was Yoda. Yoda is a great spiritual teacher. So thank you for those examples. I'd like to move on to looking at some outer practices now. And you know, edgewalkers are people who walk between the inner world and the outer world, between the material world and the spiritual world, between the world of ideas and action. And so these are some things that I've read about and sometimes do, have heard about from other people. So I'm just going to give you a list of some, again, to kind of conversation starters of some things I've heard, and then have you add to them, enhance them, share what works for you. If some of these don't work for you, feel free to say why, because that just will enhance the learning from everyone. So the first one comes from Ted Canfield. He has a book called The Power of Focus. And he has a basic principle that is do what you do best and let others do what they do best. And he gives an example of the Rolling Stones. Like when they have a concert, they fly in, but before they've ever gotten there, the trucks have come in and people have unloaded the equipment and people have done marketing and there's the venue where everybody's organized, the ushers and the food and all of those kinds of things. And all they do is they walk on stage, they play, and they give it their all, and they walk off. But they have like over 200 people who are involved in setting up each concert. So they do what they do best, and then they let everyone else do what they do best. And I know for myself that I keep thinking I have to do it all. And that gets me very scattered. I'm not good at a lot of things, and as a result, when I go in that direction of trying to do it all and not ask anybody for help or not delegate something to someone else because I think I can do it better, you know, ego having a tantrum again, I love that phrase, then I'm not doing what I do best. And so this principle has been one that's given me a lot to think about in my own life and work. The second one is, if you feel swamped, and so many people these days feel so overloaded, you know, the main thing I hear from people is this whole sense of time poverty. This saying over and over again, there's never enough time, there's never enough hours in a day. Well, that's a belief that you've given yourself, but it's not necessarily true. And there are ways to create more time. Stefan, I don't know how to say his last name, but it's something like Renton Sheffin, who was at one time the director of Omega Institute, wrote a wonderful book called Time Shifting that is a practical, scientific, and spiritual approach to developing a different kind of relationship with time and getting away from feeling swamped. But if you are in the middle of feeling swamped, ask for help, whatever kind of help you need. The third thing is, don't multitask. We have, in the society, held multitasking up as some kind of badge of honor. Like, look at me. Look at all these things I can do at once. I'm a one-man band, you know, and I'm playing harmonica and beating the drum and blowing a trumpet all at the same time. And the research is starting to show that, and actually been showing for about 10 years, that when people multitask, they lose energy, chemical, electrical energy in their brain. Every time you switch from one task to another, so if you're focusing on a telephone call and then you glance at email, or someone walks in the door and you got to sign your signature to something, each one of those little switching of tasks costs your brain energy, which costs you energy. And you are not as effective as if you focused. I have a friend who's worked at Blue Cross, and she studied shamanism and Tai Chi and, Qigong, and deeply spiritual. And she said that the most powerful concept she's learned in her spiritual studies is the concept of completion. And she learned that from Qigong, that what you start, you bring around full circle to completion. You don't do other things in between. You stay focused on that thing, complete it, and then move on to the next. So the brain research is showing that that is a more effective way to do things energetically and in terms of actual productivity. Another external or outer work type of approach is to set priorities and stick to them. Basic time management. Stephen Covey in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People writes very beautifully about setting priorities. Another person that I've been inspired by lately is Cheryl Richardson, who has a book called Take Time for Your Life. And she talks about priorities in taking a look at what are the absolute yeses in your life, those things that are why you're here, what gives you meaning and purpose and energy. And you make a list of those things that are absolute yeses for you, and then learn to say a powerful no to things that are not. And so many of us, especially those who see themselves on a spiritual path, want to please others, want to be of service, want to give. I heard a story once about Mother Teresa, that Mother Teresa would close the gates at 6 o'clock every night, and people would say, how can you do that? There's people dying on the street. And she would say, I have to take care of the sisters first. And she closed the doors because people needed to renew. That was her priority, was those of service need to take care of themselves. So this is basic time management. You set your priority and then really stick to it. I have a method that I read somewhere online that really helps me, and so I wanted to share that with you. It's called Ready, Doing, Done. And you can Google that and see pictures of the way this is laid out and read a little bit about the article, Ready, Doing, Done. And it's simply to take a piece of flip chart paper or a whiteboard or something and a bunch of sticky notes and list all of your projects, not all of your, you know, minute to-do list, but the projects, things that are going to make a difference in some way. So each sticky note gets one project. And so you put those all under the ready column. You create three columns on your board. So the first one says ready, the middle one says doing, and the third one says done. And you start with everything in the ready, and then you look at your whole list and you choose three to be working on or doing. So they go in the doing column. And the principle, according to whoever created this method, is we can't really focus on more than three big projects or tasks at a time. More than that really just gets us too scattered and overwhelmed. So if you focus on the three, you put those in the middle, and you just don't do anything on the things in the ready column. You focus only on those top three, and when one of them is done, you move it over to the done column, and then you can move something else from the ready column to the middle to doing, but not until. And I have found that really effective. Because I tend to generate a lot of different kinds of things that I'm working on, and it has made me focus, and I think I get more done in a more peaceful way. The last thing is something, again, that Jack Canfield in the book Power to Focus says. He calls it the 4D method. And so for each thing that you have on your plate, he says, choose one of these. One, dump it. No, just don't do it. Let it go. Two, delegate it. Give it to someone else. Three, defer it. So not now, but maybe later. Or finally, like the Nike swoosh slogan, is just do it. So dump it, delegate it, defer it, or do it. So those are some of the outer work kinds of hints and tips and methods that I've come across, and so let's hear from you now. What works for you, or what comments do you have about what I've said?
Hi, it's Mary Ann here from Connecticut.
Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi, how are you?
I
am very into technology. I do it at work. I even teach emerging marketing technology and things like that. My students, as well as the people in my workplace, are always amazed that I have a flip phone. I don't have an iPhone. And the reason I do that is I need to turn down what I call the volume of what's happening in my work life and other lives in order to concentrate, or as you said, focus on what's important. And I tend to find or observe that friends of mine who have the iPhones, and I had dinner tonight with a friend of mine, and she has the iPhone next to her like it's another person. And I'm like, well, how could you focus on an individual, let alone yourself, if you've always got this other extremity next to you? So as I said, when you say an outer thing is, and it sounds really weird, and as I said, people think I'm like a Luddite, but I keep my flip phone for that purpose, that there's times I don't want to be tied into the world, that I need to focus back on where I'm at and what's important to me and what I need to do next. And so that's how I deal with it.
Wow, that sounds courageous and wise and wise. Yeah, you know, you're reminding me of my former boss when I first came to the university. And in the middle of a conversation, he would just pull out his phone and start answering email.
Yeah.
And that was pretty insulting, I felt like, and not, you know, not connecting in any kind of way. And we did not have a very good relationship, and everyone else used to joke about him doing that. The time it got me most scared was when he was driving, and he did it while he was driving. And it was like, oh, no, 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 no.
No, No, that's not good.
Yeah,
no, not at
so
all.
We are addicted to our iPhones and then our iPads, and it's to just put that aside and just be present and be with someone is a beautiful gift and very enriching and rewarding.
Right. And it also ties in, I believe, with the multitasking. And mm-hmm. I have to admit, I'm a former addict of multitasking. But as I've maybe gotten to be in my crone age of my life, that's a creative researcher of new experiences, I have found that the more I keep focused, the more I can keep accomplishing things. Rather than letting a lot of little things get to me, I look at what's the bigger picture. And I think that's the value of being focused. Now, I do meditate, but as I said, I consciously do not let technology get into when I'm in that mode of I need to recenter myself every day, and that's what I do.
Yeah, beautiful. Thanks so much, Marianne.
That exchange. This is John.
Hi, John.
That exchange that just happened about we do this and we do that. Reminded me of a situation. I was in a retreat up in the northwest area around Gary Zukav's work, and somebody in the room said we as a generalization, and we do this, and Gary got in his face. I remember he really got in his face. What do you mean we? That includes me, and I'm not doing that, what you're saying.
Mm.
So I had a physical reaction when somebody said we do that. It might have been you, Judy. I'm not sure.
It probably was.
But and this is a guy that skips cell phones. You know, I now have phone capacity through the internet on my iPad, but I never had a cell phone. Never wanted mm-hmm. a cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
So I just skipped the technology altogether. Okay, that's enough for me.
Well, and you are another beautiful example of someone who, when you're with people, are with them. I never saw you pull out your iPad or anything else, you know, to get distracted in the conversation. You're very committed to being present. And my experience also is very committed to being in the vibration of love when you're with people. And so that's just a beautiful experience for me when I'm with you and to feel that kind of focus.
Thank you, Judy.
Mm.
So this is Sam.
Hi, Sam.
Hey. I have three thoughts provoked by the conversation. One, we were at a Conscious Capitalism conference together, right, Judy? And
yeah, you and me and John.
And I forget
and Joe
who
was on the phone. And, yeah. Uh-huh.
But then maybe we'll all remember the. There was a speaker there, and it really profoundly, might I say, affected me. I mean, I just hadn't heard it in such a way. The speaker, and this is to the point of focus on what you're good at, and the speaker said that most people spend their life trying to be good at what they're mediocre at rather than being great at what they're good at.
Mm.
That was
you remember who that was?
You know, I think it's a PR guy, the guy who, I don't remember his name. He came from a PR firm. But, it was, in one level, so obvious, it's also so true, at least for, I certainly can think about how I struggle to be good at something that to strengthen my weaknesses as opposed to being honing my strengths. And I think that's like the idea of the Rolling Stones, the performers showing up to do what they do best, which is perform. So I wanted to just share that again because I thought that was about focus, if you will, at the larger level of what we do in our life. And just, John, to echo, and this is a transition to my third thought, is in theater particularly, we are trained when we talk about us, ourselves, what I feel or what I do, and I sort of mm-hmm. get that. I'm doing something really different in my life the last almost a year now, which is I'm an actor, a performer, and I'm now doing a one-man show that Judy, you saw during its development. And I've learned a lot about focus because I'm now doing a show that's about 55 minutes long. And what I was struggling often of getting, you know, I'd be up there and I could get lost, or I would forget, or I'd skip things. And through doing it over and over again, I've come to understand what it means to focus, at least in that regard. And that is really keeping my mind on what I'm doing. I can now literally experience when I think of a second thought that I can be on stage and performing, and you know, a thought as small as, oh, that person's got a blue dress on. You know, if the mind goes there, I can get lost. And It's just been an extraordinary, lesson for me on one. And it takes the concentration of being present and doing what I'm doing in real time. And I want to use the word calming the mind, so that it is focused on the story I'm telling. And it is very easy to let other things sort of get my attention or creep into the mind and talk and be thinking something at the same time. And that's very dangerous territory for me. But it's been quite a learning experience for me, but very much about focus.
Thanks for sharing that. That's something I notice when I'm singing, you know, and performing and playing guitar and singing. And if I, especially what gets me distracted is like, oh, my voice is really sounding good, or, you know, the judgment, or, oh, man, I really messed up that chord, you know, and that, those kinds of thoughts totally can get me where I'll forget the words or, or just lose track of where I am in the song. And so to calm the mind, I love that phrase, it's like calming the ego that's having a tantrum. We want to put those thoughts together. Can get you back to being your highest self and doing your best, because you're centered and you're focused and you're allowing a higher expression to come through you to serve others, which your play beautifully does. Can you just say for like in 1 minute something about the play and what you're doing with it now, in case there's an opportunity for people to see it?
Okay, quickly. The play is called The Axel Dance, and it's, you know, you can Google it and see. It is a one-man show about what's involved in being with somebody you love through their end of life or facing that, and it's really about the emotional and spiritual experience of facing the prospect of being with the person you love most in the world through their end of life, and what would it take to do that. And it really is about using my own experience of going from sheer terror and fear of the prospect to understanding the beauty and dignity of the privilege of that potential. And there's a surprise ending where I don't ultimately end up having to do that at that time, but I was faced with that possibility, and it's gotten some really terrific response. And I will be doing, if you're in the New York area, if you're in Indianapolis, the 26th and the 29th, but I'm going to be doing it all over, you know, throughout New York. It's based on what happened when my wife went through breast cancer, so October is a big month, and there'll be about 10-11 performances in the New York City area, including one in Kingston, New York, and the dates are on the website. It has become my calling. I found a gift in this show that I have found, and so it's what I do now.
That's so exciting to hear, Sam. This is Sam Simon, by the way, in case people didn't catch your last name. And so, Sam, I do hope that people will check it out if they haven't already seen it. Some of the people on the call were at our conference, and so they have seen you, or they may have caught you when you did it in San Francisco. So I'm just delighted that you're continuing to follow your passion. You know, and you're really focusing on what you do best. You really do have a gift, and I've seen what it does for other people. That's very, very moving. Thank you for this beautiful work.
Judy, this is Sue. Could we have the name of that again, Sam?
Sure. It's called The Actual Dance.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we have just a few minutes left, and I have one announcement before we close the call. Any other comments before we end tonight?
Hi, Judy. This is Lynn Bourget. Dr. Lynn, great to hear you again.
Hi, Lynn. Great to hear you, too. Thanks for being a regular on this call. You and Fran.
It's my pleasure. We've known each other for so long. I love hearing what everyone has said. I'm really basking in appreciation over all the creative strategies that people have. I have to say I use all of them except for when I'm in God's flow, and then I just follow that flow. And that could be at a task level. Really, that could be at a task level or a meditative level. You know, I grew up on my guidance, my spiritual guidance, and so, you know, I may have a plan for my day, and I may have priority set. You know, I teach management, and I originated appreciative leadership, and so I have the delegation system, and I do all that. I love it. It's lovely and full of grace. And there are some days when everything is set aside, and I'm doing nothing but researching the global banking vectors. And that's not an area of expertise for me. And I do believe that if it's not your genius, it's not your job. And most of the time, I'm really good living that. But you just never know if you live spiritually when there's going to be, you know, a little note from an angel or, you know, a little piece of guidance in your morning meditation that you weren't expecting. And it just is a new and magnificent adventure. And it just changes your whole day. And I just love living that way. It's so wondrous. And I have a lot more than I'm just like being as little children, you know. And so I love having all the structures, and I do use them. But I'm ready to move into a higher realm at any moment. And from that, you never know. You know, I'm involved in much larger deals than I ever thought as a result of prayer. Not because they're in my area of expertise. I could still use my skills and make a great contribution, but it's certainly not what I planned on in my managerial planning. I just like to remain open for grace that is smarter than I and wiser than I and has a bigger scope than I do. You know, my prayer is always this beyond my wildest dream, beyond my wildest dream. And a lot of things like that have been happening to me. Well, one doesn't want to be limited by one's own preconceptions, you know.
That's right. Well, I think your comment is just a beautiful way to close this call, because all of these practices, the inner and the outer work, are really designed to put us in that place of flow. It's not necessarily a natural place for us in our, you know, when we get all task focused and, you know, going about our daily busy lives. And so we create these new habits and these practices to help us get back to center. But what you're also pointing to is sometimes it's just given as a moment of grace or a gift of grace that even without the work, we can get into that flow. And there are no rules when we're in that flow.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's just a beautiful place to be and to trust, and the magic happens. And I can hear it in the light and the delight in your voice, and what a wonderful way that is to live.
It's a constant adventure of joy and appreciation. I just love it. Thank you so much for this wonderful call. It gave me a chance to kind of step back and realize that and appreciate it more.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad. Thank you. Thank you to all of you for being on the call. My final announcement before we close is that next month in September, I will be starting a profile certification training for the Edgewalker Profile, which is a 50-item questionnaire that measures the 5 qualities and the 5 skills of being an Edgewalker, and provides a report, a customized report for people that helps them to develop their strengths wherever they're already strong is what we encourage people to do best. And so there's a development plan created for people, and it goes along with coaching. We have several coaches who are certified on this call, and we're opening it up now to more people who are interested in adding this as a tool to the coaching that they already do. So if you're interested in learning more about that, then please contact me, and I can send you information on that. And then our next call is September 26th, and our hostess for that call is Patricia Barley, and she is a real expert on integrating spiritual approaches to marketing. So it's called Marketing from the Heart. I actually don't have my notes on that. It has a subtitle, but it's Marketing from the Heart, and it really is a spiritual approach to marketing, and you can really feel Patricia's heart as she shares what she's learned, and then of course she'll open the call up for dialogue and discussion. It's, none of these calls are meant to be like a workshop or a webinar training. It's really an opportunity for us to share thoughts and ideas and feel more connected to other people who are like us on this journey. So thank you again for being on the call, and I hope that you're able to join us next month, if not sometime even sooner than that. So many, many blessings to all of you. If you find that you've used any of the techniques or approaches tonight that you hadn't heard before and you get some interesting results from them, I'd love to hear from you by email, and let's keep the dialogue going. Blessings,
thank
everybody.
You.
Good night.
Thank you,
Judy. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Blessings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good
thank
night.
You. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Blessings.
Bye, doll.
Bye, Judy.
Night.
Bye.
Bye.